people might have a perception of Montana as being kind of slow or laid back or, you know, not really interested in growing fast. But these are ambitious entrepreneurs, ambitious companies. They want to compete globally.
This is Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, a podcast that explores why Montana leads the nation in entrepreneurship and business startups. I'm Arnie Sherman. Montana is increasingly referred to as a booming technology state or a mini Silicon Valley. On today's show, we will be joined by Christina Quick Henderson, Executive Director of the Montana High Tech Business Alliance. The Alliance boasts more than 350 member companies throughout the state. Christina and I will discuss what Montana offers that has enticed a myriad of new companies to start up or relocate here, and what resources are available to help already established businesses to thrive and grow. Production support for this Can Do podcast is made possible in part by the Dennis and Phyllis Washington Foundation, dedicated to investing in people to improve the quality of their lives, and by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans, and by Blackfoot, providing communication solutions for Montana businesses, plus opportunities like C2M Beta, an innovation lab aimed at helping startups thrive. C2MBeta.com. Christina, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Over the past few months, I've run into a number of former Montana State University or University of Montana students either working for or applying for jobs at Montana-based technology companies. These companies didn't even exist a year or two ago. So what's going on in Montana?
Yeah, there is a huge tech boom happening in Montana, and things are changing really fast. And I'm actually really encouraged to hear that you're talking to students who are applying for these jobs, because one of the challenges that we've had as a Montana High Tech Business Alliance has been the lack of awareness among students about the job opportunities that are out there. So in the last, just in the last 4 or 5 years, there's been a huge uptick in high tech and entrepreneurship. In 2012, we had the sale of Right Now Technologies in Bozeman for $1.8 billion. In the wake of that, we've seen all kinds of startups happening from former Right Now Technologies folks. We've seen a lot of just Montana-grown startups cropping up, and a lot of out-of-state companies that are choosing to put operations in Montana because the state has a lot of advantages for doing business.
What are those advantages?
Well, for the last 4 years, we've conducted surveys with the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research. So we've actually talked to high-tech entrepreneurs every year, and we ask them, what are the number one, you know, what are the top benefits to doing business in Montana? And every year, the number one answer is the quality of life. We have this incredibly beautiful landscape, this beautiful place, connection to the outdoors, great communities, great schools. All of those things add up to great quality of life. And that's really attractive for entrepreneurs to start their companies here. And it's really attractive for workforce, and in particular, that kind of creative class, highly educated workforce that a lot of high-tech companies are looking for. And the number two benefit to doing business in Montana is the quality of that workforce. So we have really hardworking Montana people that are awesome employees. They're loyal. We have really good retention compared to some of the other tech hubs like Silicon Valley. So lots of good benefits to doing business here.
What's interesting about that is it wasn't that long ago when, if you asked the same business people or the business community, you know, what they were looking for, they would say transportation, they would talk about business climate, rules and regulations, and that seemed to have fallen by the wayside now.
You know, some of those things I would say are still on the minds of businesses. They're never going to totally go away. But when we ask kind of that related question of what are your biggest obstacles to doing business, the number one barrier to doing business for these companies is access to talent, finding enough qualified, trained people to fill those jobs.
With technology almost changing instantaneously, do we have the talent prepared to handle the jobs that companies are looking for?
Certainly. I think the universities in Montana are graduating students that are awesome employees for these growing tech companies. The biggest thing that tech demands is a willingness to learn. and get up to speed on things quickly, and a willingness to jump in and tackle something that you might not have exactly seen before or might not be familiar with. So if our universities are putting out students who are excited about working with technology and eager to learn, we've got multiple companies in Montana that are poised to train them in the specifics of the software programs or the technologies that they're working with. And then those new employees are able to hit the ground running and compete effectively with employees in New York City or Silicon Valley or Austin or anywhere.
Since 2014, you've been the executive director of the Montana High Tech Business Alliance. So tell me a little bit about the alliance and what it offers its members.
We launched this new trade association going on 5 years ago. It had its roots in Bozeman. So the economic development community approached tech leaders there about starting an industry group for tech. They'd already started some groups around the outdoor industry and photonics industry there. And those leaders were excited about it, but they said, we want this to be a statewide initiative. So they hired me, let me stay here in Missoula, where I was living and working at the time. And then we launched with 20 founding members. And today we have more than 350 members. So it grew really quickly. I think even those of us who were launching it and who knew tech was growing quickly were surprised by how fast it grew, by how many companies were out there, how many we were finding. Today, we have about a little more than a third of those members are in Bozeman. About a third are here in Missoula. We have a large group up in the Flathead. And then the rest are all across Montana building incredible companies. Our top line goal is to help these high tech and manufacturing companies create high paying jobs. And the three ways that we do that are first to connect those companies together. We host networking events and try to create a statewide technology community. The second way that we do that is to get the story out and get visibility and promote the industry. So this has been kind of a hidden boom, even to people within the state, but certainly to folks out of the state. When people think of Montana, they might think of national parks and, you know, a beautiful place to vacation. They're not necessarily thinking that we're the high tech hub that we are. So we've conducted original research, produced studies, and that we do a lot of storytelling just to get the word out about what's happening in high tech. And then the third thing we focus on is filling those jobs. So we have a high tech jobs portal at mthightech.org/jobs. Visit classrooms and have all kinds of initiatives to try to get workforce into these growing companies.
Well, one of the points you just mentioned, which I think is important, is the wages and salaries. You know, Montana historically ranks on an average fairly low. I think even in Missoula, the average wage is in the 40s or low 40s. But I just recently heard that a company like Advanced Technology Group here, which has over 125 employees, their average salary is $77,000 a year. And that does change the economic landscape and affect lots of other issues like affordable housing and things like that. And so is that one of the things you're striving for, to bring the companies in that will pay those kinds of wages and then help local companies do the same?
Absolutely. In the studies the surveys that we conduct of our members and also non-member tech companies, those companies are growing 9 times the overall Montana economy, and they're paying twice the median wage. They plan to create 1,200 new jobs in 2018. And in 2017, they created $1.7 billion in revenue into the state of Montana. This is a huge industry, and it does tend to be very high paying. So the growth is a great indicator for the rest of the economy. And it's a great field for people to be aware of as they think about, you know, what type of a career do I want to go into? What kind of a job do I want to get? High tech is a great field. So even if you're not majoring in computer science necessarily and interested in those really technical jobs, you could be an accountant or a marketing person or a salesperson in these types of companies and experience those same kinds of high wages at a company like ATG.
For our listeners who aren't from Montana, $1.7 billion may not sound like a lot of money in California, but in a state of 1 million people, it's a significant impact on the overall economy.
I would agree. Yeah.
So what makes a great tech company? You're working with 350 of them. You've seen some of them start from inception. You know, what separates an average company from a great company these days?
One of the things that I think is great about Montana companies is they're very connected to the customer, and they're very much about creating value for that customer. And that kind of a focus is, I would say, the essence of any good company, tech or non-tech. But you have a real value in Montana for bootstrapping and for customer-centric product development. And I think those two things combined really require a measure of discipline and careful listening to develop products and services that are really going to meet your customers' needs. And again, those build companies that are very competitive internationally and that kind of have that Montana spirit to them, even if they do ultimately take on capital to help their business grow. I find that a lot of our tech companies in Montana are very focused on the customer.
In the tech area, what are the requisite qualities for leadership these days?
So I actually would counter that what makes a great leader, I don't know if you've ever read Jim Collins' work, Good to Great, but he talks about that level five leader that combines humility with a drive and an ambition to help that company achieve their goals. And I think in Montana, we have a lot of those level five leaders. They have that balance of like genuine ambition. I mean, people might have a perception of Montana as being kind of slow or laid back or not really interested in growing fast. But these are ambitious entrepreneurs, ambitious companies. They want to compete globally. Like, they're not shy about competing. But they also do have that Montana humility. We're the kind of state where you could be sitting next to some guy or girl in like a plaid shirt that's very laid back that seems like, you know, they could be running the back end of the company, and they own that company, but you wouldn't know it because we don't really present ourselves in a flashy, ostentatious way. That's one of the things that I love about Montanans. And so I think that we're great at combining that humility and ambition together that makes for excellent leadership and a good company culture.
Let me ask you the quintessential question in this sector. Are entrepreneurs born or made, in your opinion?
I would say it's a combination, and here's why. I think there's definitely an entrepreneurial spirit that some people have, that desire to create something, to start something new, a drive to make something happen that's kind of exceptional, and that it's maybe there's a certain percentage of the population that's just really driven to do that. Regardless of what anybody says or where they're planted, they would become an entrepreneur. But you also see trends of, you know, entrepreneurship tends to run in families. And so if you grow up in a home where your parents own businesses or you have relatives who are entrepreneurial, you see that as a possibility, as a good career option. And it will probably be supported in that in your family. And so you're much more likely, I think, to try out entrepreneurship and go into it. And certainly there are experiences you can have and things that you can learn throughout your career and your lifetime that would prepare you well for entrepreneurship. But I would say it's a combination.
I want to talk about women in entrepreneurship. A recent study indicated that in the venture capital world, only 3% of venture capital goes to women-run enterprises, women-run startups. What's the landscape for women in the Montana high-tech landscape?
From what I've observed, statistically, Montana is fairly comparable to the rest of the country in terms of our percentages of women starting, in particular, tech companies or leading technology companies. About 18% of our member companies are founded by or led by women. You've interviewed some fantastic women, Montana women entrepreneurs on this podcast, which I appreciate very much. And we're always trying to increase the visibility of those women entrepreneurs so that other women can be inspired to launch their ideas and start companies. But yeah, historically, we've just seen trends where women are less likely to engage, less likely to get venture capital investment. But I'm really encouraged. A number of Montana's companies actually recently hired women executives. So OnX here in Missoula, fantastic Montana-grown company, just got $20 million in growth capital. They just hired a female CEO, Laura Orvidas, who has had a long and storied career at Amazon before coming here to lead that company. KOA just hired a woman president, Toby O'Rourke. So I'm very encouraged that that's will trend upward, that we'll see more women leading companies and more women starting companies in Montana. And I think the more that we can highlight the success stories of those women and encourage women who have great ideas or have the skills to start companies, the more that we'll see those statistics go up.
You're a professor in management and organizational behavior. So what are the new things that you're teaching now to your students?
You know, we talk a lot in my classes about leadership. One of my favorite ideas that I like to plant comes from some communication experts called Neffinger and Kohut, who talk about compelling leaders as displaying a combination of both strength and warmth. So you are strong in that you can persuade other people to follow you. You have a confidence about you and a strength in your demeanor that persuades other people to believe that you're a great leader. If you go overboard in that strength, you can become domineering and turn people off and make people no longer want to work for you. So you have to balance that with warmth, which is kind of empathy, encouragement, showing concern and care for your employees as human beings. If you go too far to the extreme with that, then you can end up being too much of a friend and letting people walk over you or not being able to make tough decisions or persuade people to do what you need them to do. And so a good leader has to balance those two qualities. And so we talk a lot about those types of, you know, leadership principles in our organizational behavior class.
As I move around some of the new tech companies, particularly ones started by millennials, I notice that there's what I call new century perks that didn't exist in, you know, previous workplaces. There are companies that offer Kegenators in their shop. They don't have any set work schedule, or their people are working remotely or virtually. Does that make a difference? Has that changed organizational behavior much compared to, I was just watching Mad Men on TV. They all come in, they all sit in an office. You know, it wasn't that long ago. They were all smoking and drinking during the day, and that was their organizational behavior. Has this really changed organizational structure?
I think it's changed. Has it changed organizational structure? I'm not sure. It certainly changed sort of the dynamic and the look of a workplace. You see a lot of open plans in terms of folks don't have closed off offices. They're working in one big space together and using a lot of digital tools like internal chat to communicate. And those types of Silicon Valley style perks that were started by companies like Google and Apple, you're certainly seeing that infiltrate the tech culture in Montana too, where you'll see folks are playing pool and ping pong during the workday on their breaks, and they're hopping the kegerator in the afternoons. And so those sorts of things are kind of fun. Do I think that they're what's essential about a company culture? Not really. I would say that what's far more important is giving people a sense of true motivation, of being engaged in the company, of feeling like they're having an impact, giving them autonomy over their positions to really determine the direction of their jobs and figure out how that work gets done. So I think those types of management practices are far more important to having a good culture at a tech company than some of the perks that are kind of fun to talk about, but not necessarily essential to.
So in essence, a company may look different, but its inner workings are pretty much the same.
I think what made a good company 50 years ago is probably still what makes a good company today in a lot of ways. And certainly, you need to keep up with the ways that people are communicating. We have some new challenges to face in terms of remote work and the ways that people have flexible schedules or they're using video conferencing and other tools to connect. And so there's some real different management challenges to tackle in terms of how to keep those employees engaged and part of the team, and decisions that have to be made of, do we really want everybody on one big campus to be able to talk face to face, or is it okay for people to work from home a few days a week or work from home every day of the week and have a distributed model? So those are certainly new challenges that we have to face, but in terms of the core principles that determine a company's culture and value and whether it's a good place to work, I think it's probably still the same.
Based on your classroom experience, are the students that you are seeing in the MBA program or coming out as undergraduates, are they up to the task of what companies are really looking for? Do they have the internal flexibility and the the view towards the horizon that companies want?
I would say yes and no. There are a lot of fantastic students who are being graduated from the University of Montana or Montana State University. And you can see this because they're being recruited by top consulting firms. You know, the KPMGs and the Accentures of the world are really excited to hire Montana students and encourage them to move away to cities. And so we definitely have to be competitive as Montana-grown companies in order to get that top talent. But you do see a real need among students for understanding soft skills, how to engage in a workplace. I think sometimes the ways that technology has been put into the hands of young people with smartphones and texting all the time, that some of those traditional social skills and interpersonal skills have maybe taken a hit because of our cultural shift toward being online or engaged in technology. And so it's important for those of us who are educating young people or parents and raising young people to make sure that they really are developing those soft skills and those interpersonal skills along with their comfort with technology.
Speaking of competition, You mentioned a third of the companies are based in Missoula, obviously because of the University of Montana. About a third of the companies are in Bozeman because of Montana State University. Is there a competition between the locales for, you know, for talent, for connectivity? Do we see a geographic competition here?
I think that the competition is really becoming more of a thing of the past. If you look at the way a lot of these tech companies operate, they don't respect those kinds of boundaries. I mean, just an example that I cited earlier of Onyx Maps from Missoula, they opened a Bozeman office and are recruiting there and here. Companies like Workiva, out-of-state company that's planted a huge office in Montana, they have an office in Bozeman and in Missoula. You see a lot of interconnectivity, in particular between those two tech hubs of business going back and forth, talent being recruited in multiple locations. We, from the beginning, have really tried to push that Montana needs to be one big entrepreneurial community. It's just necessary because we only have a million people in this big state. So we really have to work together. You need to look outside of your own community to find mentors, to find business support and entrepreneurial resources. So I think that we're going to continue to see the state kind of interconnecting to be one big community and a little less competition between particular communities because no one community is really big enough, frankly.
We're speaking with Christina Quick Henderson, Executive Director of the Montana High Tech Business Alliance. So, Christina, what prepared you for this job? What was your genetic, you know, makeup that led to you being the, you know, the inaugural Executive Director for the Alliance?
Well, if you told my 18-year-old self what I would be doing today, I never would have envisioned this outcome. So it's been a long and winding story. I started my career as an English teacher, graduated with an English degree from the University of Iowa, and then I married a forester. And so my husband is an analyst with a PhD in forestry, works for the U.S. Forest Service. So we've moved places with trees and not a lot of people, and they've tended to have natural resource-based economies. And so we moved to rural Michigan, and I just couldn't get a job. And there weren't any to apply for. So I wandered into business and I started working for a local marketing company, writing ads and working with small businesses. And I just fell in love with business. And I loved what these kind of small town entrepreneurs were doing. They were building these companies, coming up with new product ideas, creating real value, creating jobs for their friends and neighbors. And it just really opened up my eyes to what business was and what it could be and kind of that promise of entrepreneurship. And in particular for rural communities, rural states like Montana, I started to notice when I was working in Michigan that a lot of the companies were in advanced manufacturing or had some kind of tech-based component that was allowing them to serve customers outside of the region, outside of the state, and that allowed them kind of to scale exponentially and get really big. So I jumped over and worked in economic development for the county in Michigan for a couple of years. And then when we moved to Montana for my husband's job, I landed at the University of Montana working for the Bureau of Business and Economic Research. And I really started to look at entrepreneurship and its impacts here in Montana, too. I got my MBA while I was there. I was president of the Entrepreneurship Club, and I moved here into Montana in 2011. And then in 2012, Right Now Technology sold. And you could see the impact of that sale on the economic data, in particular for Gallatin County. So I got really excited about that promise of entrepreneurship and what it could do for the state, raising wages, having an impact. And so when the opportunity came to launch the High Tech Business Alliance, I jumped into that. So I've kind of had a varied career and reinvented myself a few times, but have pretty consistently loved working with entrepreneurs and still do.
Well, there's so much going on in the entrepreneurial space, in the high tech business space. So what do you read or watch or listen to that keeps you up to speed?
Well, I love podcasts, and I'm not pandering, but I do enjoy listening to your podcast while I run, or Justin Engel's new podcast, Interviewing Montana Companies. The spirit of those two podcasts is very much aligned with our mission at the Alliance to get these stories out to the world. I love listening to audiobooks. I've been on a kick lately of, I guess, Midwestern billionaires. So I read the biography of Warren Buffett, The Making of an American Capitalist by Lowenstein, which was very interesting. And then I just read The Sons of Wichita, which is a biography of the Koch brothers. So it's been very fascinating to look at. They're also building kind of these big business empires in unlikely places. And I think one of the myths of entrepreneurship in our country is that you have to be in New York or Silicon Valley in order to build something great. And I think often you are at an advantage to build something outside of those centers because you don't have the same pressure of the groupthink that a lot of people trying to build companies in the middle, in the thick of it, would face.
Sure. In New York, California, Chicago, big cities, you just get channeled into certain, you know, limited areas, and it's hard to break free. It's interesting you mentioned that because Warren Buffett and the Koch brothers and others, they're from small towns. We even have our own homegrown billionaires here in Montana.
We do.
So it fits together very nicely that you're focusing in on that and seeing what small town America can bring to the 21st century. Mm-hmm. What's on the horizon for the Alliance? What does the future look like?
We're at an interesting crossroads. We're a little just over 4 years old, going on 5 years old, and I think we've had a huge early growth and had scrambled to keep up with that growth and with the growth in the industry. But now we're looking at what's the next phase of growth? How do we get to that next level and really start to kind of grow up as an organization, put some foundational things in place to ensure our long-term sustainability? You know, we were really a startup ourselves. And so we kind of are going through those same sorts of growing pains that a lot of startups go through where, you know, you have the initial people that started, you get things launched, you get things going, you prove that it's going to work and that it's an established thing. And then you kind of have to say, okay, well, you know, what are some of our operational practices that, you know, maybe we should stop just doing everything in spreadsheets and switch over to a CRM. You know, maybe we should try to build some more foundations underneath us to keep us strong going forward in the future. So that's kind of what's next. We've gone through some leadership transition lately. So Lance Tinseth, our fearless board chair, had to leave the state for family reasons. So he moved to Colorado. So we have Jeff Trom, the CTO of Workiva, who's our new board chair. We've just brought on 3 new board members recently. I'm very proud to say that of our 6 board members now, half of them are women. So that's a proud moment for us, too. We really believe strongly in diverse perspectives on our board. So I think we have good things ahead, both for our organization and for the industry.
Well, you're mimicking your members, right? You're going through the same challenges and the same pathway that new startups go through, as you alluded to.
Yeah, we sure have. Yeah, I like to start things. And I think part of what attracts me to entrepreneurship is that idea of starting something new and that kind of fear of, I don't know if this is really going to work. If we start this thing, are people going to want to join a trade association for tech? And then getting to kind of navigate the adventure of that has been really fun.
Well, we look forward to great things from the Alliance, and it was a pleasure having you on the show today.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure to be here.
I appreciate your listening to Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, produced by Autumn Barnes and Beth Ann Austin in association with Montana Public Radio. For comments, recommendations for future guests, or general information, please go to mtpr.org. There you can also find guests' contact information and content from previous shows. Listen next time when our guest will be Michael McGill, Executive Director of the Missoula Children's Theater, the nation's largest touring company, visiting more than 1,200 communities a year. Once again, I'm Arnie Sherman, wishing you peace and prosperity. Production support for this Can Do podcast is made possible in part by the Dennis and Phyllis Washington Foundation, dedicated to investing in people to improve the quality of their lives, and by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans, and by Blackfoot, providing communication solutions for Montana businesses, plus opportunities like C2M Beta, an innovation lab aimed at helping startups thrive. C2MBeta.com.